This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Arbitration, schmarbitration. Mike Rizzo not waiting around. The organization not waiting around. Plan B, if you want to call it, because there's just no movement on the Josh Donaldson situation, because apparently Josh thinks he's worth $9.7 billion right now. I mean, I'm just kidding, of course, saying that facetiously, but can't blame Donaldson. This is probably, if somebody does step up and give him 3 or 4 years, probably last deal for Donaldson. So the Nats, the Twins, maybe even the Braves just saying, hey, dude, you got to come down a little bit, or we're just not budging from the offers we've put on the table. So the Nationals got busy and avoided arbitration hearings with all six of the eligible players, which is, you know, look, I mean, nobody wants to sit in a room and say, well, you know, you're good, but, you know, and they start trying to come up with ways to discredit the amount of money that you should make. I think arbitration hearings in baseball are probably some of the toughest things for players and organizations, because as we know, some players at even the smallest criticism get butt hurt by what they're told. And their agent says, man, they can't say that about you, and this deal's over, we're going somewhere else. They're not loyal to you. I mean, that's just the bad part of arbitration, is you got to hear some negative stuff in there more than likely. You know, Cubs did it to avoid with Chris Bryant. He got a little over 18. But the Nats, Trey Turner, obviously the big fish in all this, as he's going to get just over $7 million at 7.45. Michael A. Taylor going to get 3.325. Hunter Strickland and Wilmer Defoe at the onset of December were taken care of. And then Joe Ross with $1.5 million. And Ronis Elias at 1.975. So, you know, let's face it, Trey Turner, one of the cornerstone guys, one of the core guys that you're building with going forward. And as I say all along, you know, if you've got a good young player, a guy that stirs the drink at the top of the lineup, guys like Trey Turner don't grow on trees. When you have one, you have to take care of one. And the Nats doing that with Trey Turner at $7.45 million. And that's good news. It's good news. Taylor will be 29 on opening day. Believe it or not, babyface Michael A. Taylor. And he's set to enter his seventh major league season already. But certainly as a fourth outfielder, he's carved out a nice little niche. Obviously spent some time in the minors last year, trying to find that swing and cut down on the strikeouts. But certainly as a fourth outfielder right now, you'll take that guy. Presents a lot of versatility, great defender, good base runner, gives you a lot of things there. And, you know, as you start to shape up that bench for the Nationals, I think there's some interesting things that need to take place in spring training. You know, Andrew Stevenson obviously is a lefty pinch hitter off of the bench. Michael Taylor got a smidge of a raise from 3.25 to 3.35. And if he has 300 plate appearances in 2020, appears to be a $25,000 bonus for those 300 plate appearances, according to Zach Silver at MLB.com. So when you, the key to any team is going to be depth. Your depth has got to be good for you. And right now, the Nationals taking care of all of their guys. So right now, if you really want to look at it on the surface, and we've got a lot of guests coming up over the next 2 days, you know, here at Winterfest, Nick Ashew and Tom Lavera will kick off our coverage starting at 9 o'clock from down at the ballpark. Later on, tomorrow, Craig Heist, Byron Kerr, and myself will be there from 12 until 2:30. So if you're going to be out there tomorrow, you know, we hope to see you out there. Come by the team store. We'll be broadcasting live from the team store. You know, we'll shake hands and kiss your baby and hug him and all that other stuff. But a lot of guests coming up. We'll be talking to the players. Obviously, Mike Rizzo on the schedule. As they say, scheduled to appear. You know, things happen sometimes where a guy, depending on what other obligations they have him, there may miss a specific time that you'll hear given during the course of our broadcasting out there. But a lot of good stuff coming up throughout the weekend. And again, we'll be over there tomorrow in the team store from 12 until 2:30. But Nick and Tom get our coverage started. And right now, when you look at this thing here, either A, the biggest question is, do they make a deal for another third baseman or not? That's the obvious question. Then the other one is, when you look at after all these arbitration hearings and everything, how much money is there left now to give Ryan Zimmerman a contract for this year? If indeed that's going to happen. Now, we don't know any of the communications between Zim and the club one way or the other. The club to Zim, Zim to the club. But we know how both sides feel about each other. Ryan made that perfectly clear, you know, that it's either here or nowhere. So that's the other piece of business that remains here. Because when you look at the depth of the bullpen now, there's no question that this bullpen is in 10 times better shape right now, ready to go into this season, than it was last year. So, as we say all along, sure, you may not replace Anthony Rendon's productivity. I mean, he's one of the best hitters in baseball. I mean, it's going to be hard to duplicate that. But if you then give up less runs, you need not necessarily to score as many runs. So, as is often the case, we always say it, no one has a better plan B than Mike Rizzo. When Bryce Harper didn't want their money, he went and got Patrick Corbin. If he's going to lose productivity, he went and got somebody that was going to help keep the run total down. That worked out okay. He's done the same thing here in this offseason. Anthony Rendon didn't want their money. Let's look at some other ways to keep that down. So there's at least plenty of reasons now to be excited to go into this 2020 season. Look, winning a world championship is hard. Winning the final game of the season, only one team does it. But as is often the case and has been for the last decade, this team is built to contend. This team is built to give you a solid product when you pay your money to go to the ballpark. It's a starting staff that every night, certainly with the top two guys, as we've seen over the years. Now, you know, with the greater depth of a bullpen, this club's going to be right there again. And you know what? If another team plays better, then, hey, you tip your cap to them. All Mike Rizzo can do is get 25 guys, 40 overall in the 40-man roster, and give Davey Martinez as good an opportunity to try and win games again as you possibly can. And that, again, is taking place. There is enough here. The question is, and well, you'll hear it coming up. We'll hear from the Junkies with Jesse Docherty. Grant and Danny had Charlie Slows on this week. We'll give you a taste of those two interviews. Certainly, can Howie Kendrick even remotely duplicate what he did last year? That's a legitimate question. I think even Howie would tell you that. But with the other depth that they have brought in, again, you're not going to have to play Howie 150 games, you're going to be able to spot him the proper rest that he needs in between starts. And with his versatility, you know, he can do multiple things for you. Still gives you a quality bat off the bench as a right-handed pinch hitter. A guy that's not going to freak out in a big moment. And those are the kind of role players, again, that help winning. It's that simple. You need those kind of guys to affect winning, and those kind of guys do that. We know what he means in the clubhouse. His influence is terrific. And the one thing we talked about, if you do make a trade, clearly the club doesn't want to partner with Victor Robles, as many people in a deal would certainly ask for. And when you have good people and you want to trade for good people, people are going to ask for good people in return, or at least a good general manager, except the people in San Diego who Mike Rizzo basically committed robbery against. But at least when you go to the ballpark over the next 2 days here at Winterfest, you're going to see your world champions. And you know what? You're going to feel like going into spring training when you head down to West Palm in February and you want to have some fun in the sun and see some spring training baseball. You're going to go to the ballpark feeling that your club has an opportunity to win again. You're not going to be like some markets that probably know that as spring training gets underway, it's going to take a miracle for them to play contending baseball. And in a market right now where we've been spoiled here of late, Caps success, Nats success, Mystics success, you know, we want to keep that good feeling going. And as I said, from an organizational standpoint, all you can do is give your customers a good product when they come to the ballpark every night. The Nationals are in position to do that again. Trey Turner avoids arbitration, the 1 year, $7.45 million contract. When we come back, the Junkies with Jesse Docherty, Grant and Danny with Charlie Slows. It's the Nats Hot Stove Show in front of Ashew and Lavero, live from the ballpark and Winterfest on Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan. I would just like to walk down like half street to the ballpark with this right behind me. You know, all those musicians, my boys that bang on the buckets. I am a percussion fan. And if you want to sit there and play drums as I'm walking down the road, you're more than welcome. And I'll be sitting there going, we're going to Sizzler. We're going to Sizzlers. We're going to the ballpark. Not today for me. I'll be there tomorrow, 12 until 2:30. Ashew and Lavera get our coverage from Winterfest started at 9 o'clock this morning. And then, of course, you know, Tommy loves Florida. Just came back from Florida. And he'll be, I'm sure, headed back when the Nats go to West Palm as well. Junkies this week had a chance to talk to Jesse Docherty of the Washington Post, who's turned into a fabulous beat writer covering the Washington Nationals. They chatted about so far what's happened in the offseason.
Welcome back. Chucky's on 106.7 The Fan. We are live on NBC Sports Washington, presented by Crop Metcalf. They are the official heating cooling company of the Junkies. If you're looking to be their next five-star HVAC technician or plumber, just visit cropmetcalf.com to join their team. Joining us right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline to talk a little Nationals. They've been making moves this week. Is Jesse Docherty, covers the Nationals for the Washington Post.
I can't believe that Valdez remembers Jesse's walk-up song.
He does.
He's good at that.
He remembers
those
things.
He's like a savant with that. He has a list somewhere. Are you cheating, Valdez?
I think he just remembers.
Yeah, he's good.
No, I just remember.
What's the name of this band again, or this guy?
It's The Band.
The Band, right. I can't believe he remembers that stuff.
What's up, Jesse?
How you guys doing? That's an easy band name to remember.
It is.
That is true. That is true.
So Jesse, the Nats have been busy this week, huh?
Yeah. 5 moves in 5 days, and it seems like it's going to settle down now. But that was a blitz there. You know, once they hit Plan B, they really hit it.
Right. So they, by hitting Plan B this way and accumulating the guys that they did, are we to assume then they're out of the Donaldson sweepstakes, despite what they might say? The Bryant deal's not going to happen, and these are the pieces they're going to have to work with?
Yeah, I think that's pretty safe. Of course, you know, last minute stuff, barring any changes, you know, those sort of couched words. But I even saw after the Will Harris deal when they go 3 years, $24 million for him, and tie up a good amount of money, that was sort of the start of this quote unquote Plan B. And then once they started bringing in those other guys, the Nationals forever have been, you know, under Mike Rizzo, when they want a guy, they get him. It's like they'll pay a little more than most teams. They'll make sure to shore him up. And I don't know the exact numbers on this, but I'd be pretty sure that they were the highest bidders by a decent margin for Daniel Hudson, for Starling Castro, just because when they have a hole to fill, when you're a contender year in and year out, and you're always building toward a World Series. I mean, they've been doing that since 2012, 2013. You make sure you fill your holes. You make sure you get the guys you want. So when it seemed like balancing, maybe the market got a little too high and they had to go in a new direction, they made sure very deliberately to fill every single other hole they had. And that's where we are right now. So, yeah, I mean, I think the way you set that up is pretty sure.
Jesse, regarding Bryant, do you know exactly, or have you heard names that the Cubs want in exchange for Bryant? I know Keyboom had to have been one, but... And then a couple of pitching prospects, but was there an everyday player they wanted in return? Did they want Robles and Keyboom? Do you know what the demand was on that?
Yeah, Victor Robles was certainly in discussions. I think the Nationals kicked the tires on Chris Bryant early in the offseason. I wouldn't say talks were really heavy like throughout the winter. I did hear that, you know, early on when they were trying to fill this void, when obviously Rendon was going to leave, Bryant was a possibility. The thing with him, he has a service time grievance still working out, so no team's going to go, you know,
right,
trade for him until they know, sorry, how many teams years to control they have left. But Victor Robles was the name that was in the mix there, and the Nats are not interested in parting with him right now. I think that, you know, moving forward, top of their farm system, Carter Keeboom and Luis Garcia was entirely off limits last year. Could that change moving forward? Potentially, you know, if they wanted to make a big splash deadline deal this year, get another bat if they're in the mix, because they do have the financial flexibility now to make a bigger move during the season than they did last year. But yeah, Robles was the guy that was the complete hang up on the Bryant deal.
Right, right.
So who's going to play third? You know, when they acquired Castro, it was reported he's going to play second.
Is Cabrera going to play third?
I mean, I got to imagine Castro's going to play a chunk over there.
Yeah, I thought that those sort of reports of Castro's going to play second in the seconds after he was signed were a little premature. I don't really know how you could know a guy's position immediately after bringing him in when you don't even know the rest of your roster. So I think there is a really good chance he plays a lot of third base just because he's an everyday player. And you have other guys right now on the roster who could play there, whether it's Esteban Cabrera, even Howie Kendrick, who I thought everyone keeps saying he could play third. I thought he looked pretty rough over there as a fill-in last year. And then you have Carter Keeboom, who you don't know what he is yet, but conceivably he'll get a shot in spring training. The best version of your team is him playing really well early on,
right,
taking that job, and then Castro playing second. Sure. So in terms of me saying that there was premature for people to say that second base for Castro, I think that was more best case, not necessarily this is what's going to happen.
Right.
And I think another sort of quote-unquote best case would be Carter Keeboom go down to the minors for 2 months, 3 months. And I know that this is sort of an anti-player take, but I'm just sort of thinking from the team side, it's just not my opinion, would be he goes down for 2 to 3 months, tears it up, the Nationals keep it a year of control on the back end.
Which they like.
And then he comes up in like July, and they're pretty good. You know, you're in the mix, you're in second place, first place, whatever. And then he comes up in June, July, and just, you know, is a refined everyday player. And then until then, guys like Kendrick, Cabrera, Castro, some rotating mix of characters keeps the spot warm for him. That's probably your best case if you're the team. But from a baseball standpoint, being competitive right away, if Carter comes out really well and they're just taking the next step, you want him starting at third base every day.
Joined by Jesse Dougherty, covers the Nationals for the Washington Post. So let's talk about the signing of Eric Thames and what that means. He's a slugger from the Brewers, hit a bunch of home runs. We'd expect him to play most at first base. Does this mean Ryan Zimmerman's out, or are they still going to try and bring him in?
No, it does not mean Ryan Zimmerman's out at all. I think the Nationals, the quarter of final move right now, and the one that I know they're still interested in, is bringing in Zim, because if you think of the roster right now, they're going to certainly carry five bench players this year all year because there's a 26th roster spot and enables you to have an eight-man bullpen at all times. Last year they went short bench a lot, but now they'll go five players. So right now we're looking at 11 guys that are pretty locked in. If you think Michael A. Taylor is the fourth outfielder, that leaves two spots for position players. And I'd say if one goes to Carter Kieboom, then the 13th is sort of open because you don't really need another infielder. Wilmer Defoe or Adrian Sanchez does not help you at that point because you have too many guys who play second base, shortstop, whatever. They need that righty first baseman. If you sort of want to keep Howie Kendrick last year did not have a position. He wasn't in the first base platoon. He played there a lot because he earned at-bats. But the thing Dave Martinez loved about him was the ability to get him at-bats anywhere, not tethering him down. Because now you get in a sticky situation. If he's your first base platoon guy, now you need to make sure he can't play against righties because you want Tim's to get at-bats. And then now when you put him over at second base, now you're taking away at-bats from Castro. So I think leaving Howie Kendrick as sort of your roving, can play anywhere, can get him at bats as a pinch hitter, can get him at bats 3 days a week at any position, is a lot better than having him stuck in a first base platoon and then having his at bats totally tethered to someone else, some other player. So bringing in a righty first baseman like Zim actually is the perfect for this makeup of this roster because now that gives you a set platoon there, allows you to work Kendrick into that mix if need be. He can play second base, he can play third, as I mentioned, and I think that's sort of your best case in terms of construction is having a righty and lefty at first base, and then Kendrick as sort of a roving utility player who just is kind of just your professional hitter, per se, and can just play wherever Davey needs him to.
By the way, this is complete outside-the-box thinking, and I think it's probably 100% unlikely, but any thought that Ryan Zimmerman could ever return to third base, or is his arm just shot?
Oh, no chance. Way. Come on.
That's so outside the box.
I just said it was outside the box. That's the worst question in history.
Wow, he still makes throws from
I don't
first
like
base.
Outside the box thinking.
Oh, it's terrible.
No, that'll never happen.
That's a wild question.
Thank you. It's
like if I listed the possibilities, I think that would be like 70 on the list of things this team could do at third. But it's fun. That's a fun one.
Right, I mean, he makes throws on a 3-6-3 double play. He makes throws home. It,
not many.
You see the way he throws? They ain't great. It's not great.
Anyway, he was throwing from third
base. Let me ask you this. So right now, if they didn't make any other moves, and I know they probably will, but if this was the lineup, is this a worse lineup than last year?
Yes.
Yeah.
It has to be.
Significantly?
Yeah, by a pretty good margin. I mean, and the reason why I would say that is because, to me, Howie Kendrick had a career year at 35.
Right, he's going down.
I don't think that's repeatable. So I think he digresses. Starlin Castro had as good of a second half as you could imagine. And if he really unlocked something and took a step and figured out something with his swing and stance and approach, then that could be a really valuable signing for the Nationals if they get that second half guy. And that's very possible. He's only 29. He plays every day. I don't know. I think he'll be somewhere in between his first half self and his second half self last year, just because there is some regression to the mean that's going to happen with him as well. So those are kind of your 4, 5, 6 guys. Carrera again had as good of a 4 or 5 week stretch as he's going to have. He was a guy who was released last year. He's being signed on a 1 year deal. I hate kind of getting into this kind of down a rabbit hole, but the ball is different. I don't think Eric James hits 25 home runs. I mean, remember last year we were kind of playing with the golf ball, and if there's some correction there, I think some of these power numbers go down. Of course, that goes down for everybody, so that helps your pitching staff. But just in terms of the numbers for the offense, I certainly do. I think Trey Turner will take a step. I think Victor Robles will take a step. So there are ways that internally, it's not just filling from the outside. Your young players get better year to year. Juan Soto, I expect him to be great again, and I'm sure he'll improve in certain ways. So there are ways it can improve with guys that are coming back. But in terms of additions filling what you lost, I mean, that Anthony Rendon hole is just so large. So, yeah, I think it's a worse lineup.
Is the three-batter minimum officially a rule for 2020?
Yeah, it's gonna be. I actually don't know if it's official. I feel like it's been said it's gonna be official forever, but I know teams are planning as if that's gonna be a rule, and that's how they're gonna approach it.
So, all right. So we all agree. We only got a minute or two with you left, Jesse. The lineup's not as good.
Yeah.
But the bullpen better.
There's no doubt about that. How much better? Who knows? And in starting pitching, where are we going to be on that one? Because are we starting to see the decline of Max here a little bit? Is Stras going to be able to duplicate what he did? Is Sanchez going to be able to duplicate certainly what he did? I don't know.
What are they doing with the fifth starter?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting you ask that, because when you strike these deals with guys, you kind of say on the front end of them that we know the back end's going to be not great.
Right.
Like, we when you sign Anibal Sanchez for 1 year, for 2 years at 35, you're like, well, the second year is going to be whatever. And you sign, you know, Max Scherzer for 7 years, you say a 5, 6, 7, you know, we'll take our chances. 1 through 4 is our year. And then even Strasburg, obviously he got this huge extension because he was great, but let's say we're on the original 7-year deal, you know, signed. Now we're in the back half of that. The extension they signed to him originally is 7, 175. So all these guys, I mean, save Corbin, who's going to the 7-year 6, are kind of in the back half of the projections that the Nationals originally had them, where you kind of cut your losses. These are sort of the, if we get them, great years, especially with Sanchez and Scherzer. And that will be interesting, because the investment's still there and it still takes up a certain chunk of your payroll, because you have to pay those guys those years the same you did the previous years, because that's sort of how you lock them down. You kind of dangle these multi-year long-term contracts. So I think starting pitching will be a strength. I think these guys have shown the ability to adapt throughout their careers and stay fresh and stay sharp. But I do think that's an interesting question, whereas last year it was so sure.
Right.
We saw some cracks last season. You know, obviously Scherzer's injury stuff was concerning throughout the summer. Strasburg, it was so good that I think maybe his evolution maybe is the most exciting part of it, because he could really be your bona fide ace. And then Corbin was, you know, obviously really good, but had never shouldered that big of a workload that long in the season and making all those relief appearances. So his bounce back physically will be interesting as well.
But I always say this, and I said this after the Caps won the Cup. The year after you win a championship, I always give that team a little bit of a pass. I know Nats fans want to see him get back there.
Of course.
I give him a pass this year, and then in the next year you want to see him kind of contend again.
Like the Caps are doing.
Correct, because the Caps had they got to the playoffs last year, but they lose. But
that window's closing in next year. Like, you know what I mean? Some of these guys.
Yeah. That's the way I feel.
The Nats, they're older, so you kind of, I hear what you're saying, but it's hard to give them too much of a grace period because these guys aren't getting any
younger. Exactly.
True. That's true.
Exactly. By the way, last question. Will Stras start opening day, and will this be the first time he starts opening day with Max around, or am I wrong?
Oh, man. That's the one piece of, like, quote-unquote tension we have in spring training to cling to.
Yeah.
Who's your ace?
Yeah.
So expect to read like 90 stories about it in February, March.
Yep.
And hopefully we'll have an answer then.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it'll still be Max. He was the game with sort of the World Series, right?
Yeah, but he won the friggin' World Series MVP.
And the wild card game.
I think you got to give the nod
wild
to
card
Stras.
Game.
Stras might get it.
I think Stras gets it. They finally give it to him. All right. Thank you, Jesse. Really appreciate it. Great stuff.
That's the Junkies with Jesse Dougherty. When we come back, Grant and Danny with Charlie Slows from Thursday coming up as top of the hour. We'll go down to the ballpark. Ashew and Lovero live from the team store. Nats Winterfest all weekend long. Coverage right here on 106.7 The Fan. If you go to nationals.com, you can read an unbelievable story about Aaron Barrett and Adam Eaton going on a USO tour, and they're playing catch on a C-17. You ever wanted to see what's inside one of those big planes you see taking off from Andrews Air Force Base, where you can play catch inside of the darn thing while you're flying? Take a look at that. It's an unbelievable story about Adam and Aaron's USO tour, where they had a chance to interact with some troops, and just a really good story from Richard Justice. You can read it at nationals.com. Charlie Slows, Dave Jagler, they'll be a part of the proceedings this weekend down at Winterfest at the ballpark, as we'll get our coverage underway with Ashu and Lovero at the top of the hour. He joined Grant and Danny this week. Charlie talked about so far what has occurred here in the offseason, and obviously a world championship ball club and rings. They're talking about rings.
I paid my dues time after time. I've done my sentence, but committed no crime.
Grant and Danny, welcome
having you back on 106.7 The Fan. We are joined in studio by our buddy Charlie Sloes.
I know
one
that
of the
guy.
Voices of Nationals baseball here on 106.7 The Fan. And a good choice by Thom to play a little We Are the Champions.
Never gets old.
You are a champion. Where's that World Series ring? You haven't gotten it yet, I guess?
That's a popular question these days. When do you get it? Where do you get it?
Any idea? I guess it would be at spring training, right? Or opening day or something?
Well, usually the players get theirs the second day. The first day of the season, they raise the pennant. And rings are usually the second day in recent years, how other teams have done it.
Has anybody asked you anything? What's your ring size, that kind of stuff? Has anyone gotten in touch with you about that?
Not yet.
Okay.
Wait, so you haven't even given your ring size yet?
Well, it's not hard to do. Just go in any jeweler and say,
I know, but I feel like that would have already I feel like at this point, after the Caps won the Stanley Cup, the junkies had already given their ring size.
Yeah, everybody's measuring their own ring.
Right.
Do you know, I did a Caps game the year they won the Cup.
I do know that.
So I don't know how it works in the NHL, but I didn't get anything.
Yeah, I would think if you play one game, you get a ring. I don't know if you fill in one game on the broadcast. Apparently
not. How many did the junkies fill in on?
That's a good question.
Little bet.
The junkies did a little bet.
Just saying.
I love it. Charlie
but anyway, people ask me,
slinging arrows. Oh, that's
just kidding
good.
Around. I do one game. I don't think you really deserve.
No,
like
but
you've been there the whole time. But
it's a good question.
Anyway, but it's interesting because people ask you that question, and my answer is like, you know, I don't really know. I've never done this before.
Right? You haven't? Oh,
no.
That's right. Yeah.
I hope I get to do it more times, but we've never been through this before.
That would be nice.
So usually the players get fitted at the beginning of spring training, and the rings are the second day of the season, home season, that is.
Nats have been really busy. So among the moves they've made in the last week, Eric Thames, power-hitting left-handed first baseman, will be the Matt Adams role this year. Still no Ryan Zimmerman at this point. Thames will platoon a little bit with Kendrick. They signed Starlin Castro 2 years, $12 million at second base. Third base is still up in the air, but as Drubal Cabrera brought back at $2.5 million, slotted in there for now. Obviously, Castro can play some third. In the bullpen, they brought back on a multi-year deal, which a lot of people weren't sure that they would. Daniel Hudson, who was a World Series hero. They went and got Will Harris, who's been one of the best relievers in the game the last 5 years. It's been a pretty active last week for Mike Rizzo. Of all those moves, what do you like the best? What stands out?
Well, you know, I don't know. Any one thing stands out as though I didn't see the Will Harris thing coming. 3-year deal at 35.
They don't really do that. They don't give big money to relievers on 3-year deals, certainly not at that age.
Right. So obviously, you know, they know more than we do, and they're looking at his health history and, you know, projecting all that he can do. But, you know, the one thing, what you're doing here with Hudson and Will Harris, you know, and you still have Strickland, who I think they feel with Paul Menhardt can make some adjustments with him to make him a little bit more deceptive than what he was. You have Roynes Elias, you really didn't get anything out of because he was hurt. So then you still have Rainey and Suero behind them and Javi Guerra's insurance and anybody else. So you're going to the year with a much deeper proven bullpen. And, you know, last year you leaned on Doolittle too much until you got help late in the year. By that time, he was a little worn down, and you needed to get him healthy in the last month of the season, which they did. But it'd be nice if you didn't wear him down to that point. So I think the fact that you've added so much experience and depth puts them in a much better place than they were to start last year with a bullpen. And, you know, re-signing Strasburg, you'll have competition with Joe Ross and Eric Fetty and Austin Voth for the number 5 spot in the rotation, if there isn't anybody else that they bring in, and still have the rest of your top 4 in your rotation. And, you know, the other part is, you know, how do you replace Rendon's offense? Well, one way to look at it is, you know, when they struggled, their bullpen gave up a ton of runs. So if you're not giving up as many, maybe you don't need to score as many as you did all the time, but certainly there's no one player that replaces Anthony Rendon. And I think, like you said, Cabrera can play some third. Starlin Castro played a lot of third the last couple of months of the season for the Marlins after they brought up Eson Diaz. He prefers second, but he said he'll play anywhere. So I think you also have a lot of versatility in your lineup. If Davey needs to make a double switch here and there, now you have guys who can play multiple positions on that infield.
I think Davey's job got a little tougher in the last few days only because you've got a bunch of guys who are part-time players who are pretty old in your infield, in Kendrick, Castro, Cabrera, Thames. If you add Zimmerman to this stew, which you could still sprinkle him into this pot, this mixture, I mean, first, second, third, it's kind of just a hodgepodge of part-timers at this point.
Well, I think Castro's still, he's 29 going on 30.
True.
In March. He's a full-time player. He played every day. But this guy plays every game.
He does, but will he hear? Because my thinking is, if you have Zimmerman under contract and Eric Thames, Howie Kendrick's not going to play twice a week. He would play plenty of second, too, and that means maybe Castro plays some third. I mean, mm-hmm. Howie Kendrick's coming off of 900 ops. Now, he's not going to do that again this year, but for me, you didn't re-sign him to have him play twice a week. I would think you want him to play four times a week or something like that. He's not playing four times at first base.
Well, no, that's what's going to be interesting. If you have Zim, I would have thought, even before Eric Thames, well, if you just went with a Kendrick-Zimmerman shared at first base, you'd be pretty good.
You don't worry about not having a lefty bat?
Not the way Kendrick swings against righties.
Yeah.
I mean, he crushed everything.
Yeah, he did.
I also think these problems solve themselves with injuries. You got older players. You got guys that don't have a huge track record. So it's
Howie will be on the shelf. Yeah. Will be on the shelf.
Everyone's going to miss. But here's what I was going to say.
But you don't have to overplay anybody if they're all healthy.
True, that's but I want to get them enough at bats. The whole point is to get them to the playoffs so that they can then be in their roles. But to allow Howie Kendrick to be Howie Kendrick, he needs to play. I mean, he can't play once a week and come in and hit a big home run or get a double. And by the way, Starlin Castro is not a good enough offensive player, in my opinion,
to warrant
not playing Howie Kendrick. He shouldn't play. He shouldn't get 600 at bats at the expense of guys who are better than him.
So
in my opinion,
the easiest thing to do is just to have Anthony Rendon. Now you don't have that luxury anymore, right? When you have one superstar, it solves all these things. They're trying to do this Voltron, older, inexpensive parts thing where there's a soft market for those guys, so it's good value to pick up Eric Thames for the change you find in your couch. I wonder, though, if you cobble together the first base spot as a spot as opposed to just one guy, is this enough offense to replace Rendon? I'm thinking they got away with it last year with what they did at second base and then what they ultimately did at first base and even the catcher spot. I don't think they can do that this year. To me, I would have gone after a bat and kind of made the positions work later.
Well, maybe the bat is still Donaldson. Who knows?
Do you think they're still in on him?
I think they're
out,
Charlie.
They'd have to go over the luxury tax.
It would be, I don't know all the numbers. I don't know what they've offered him, but he's holding out thinking he's going to get $110 million for 4 years. I don't think the Twins are paying that. I don't think the Braves are paying that. So I don't know if the market really is what Donaldson and his agents think it is at this point. I mean, he's the only guy out there, and no one's jumping. You don't see the Dodgers jumping in. You don't see any of the other teams popping up now, a mystery team or whatever, to get in the mix. So maybe his best offers are out there, and he has to decide what he's going to take. So it'd be interesting. It's almost as if the Nats went out and made all these moves like they're out on Donaldson.
That's what it feels
and,
like.
You know, spent the money.
That's the
rep. And
they don't wait around. They're not going to wait for you to twiddle your thumbs and, maybe they'll choose me. They go and do the next thing. They're building their roster with or without you.
Well, I think they have the makings of a deep roster. And again, will they get enough offense, combination of whether you're moving people around between second and third? Cabrera has probably the most experience playing third base of anybody that they have at this point. So,
and there's some talk that Howie Kendrick could play third, but I don't see that. I don't think he wants to.
He played 10 games last year when Rendon was on the injured list.
You don't want to major in that.
No, I don't know if I want to say he hated it.
Yeah, because he didn't love it.
Well, anybody who doesn't play third on a regular basis ain't going to love it when you go over there to have to play third.
Well said.
The way that ball's coming at you. But, and then there's Keboom, almost like he's forgotten now.
He is a forgotten man. And if he has the start to the season in AAA, a lot of people think he's capable of, he's going to be a fixture.
But where?
By the end of the year.
Where?
It could be either second or third, in my opinion.
Right. It's not going to be short.
No, it certainly won't be short. But either of those positions, you let him play every day and let him get to a point where defensively he's major league caliber, and offensively the bat should be able to play after he hit 300 with a 900 ops in AAA. Who's their fifth starter? There's going to be a competition between Ross, Voth, and Fetty. Obviously, Fetty still has an option. That may work against him. I don't know. But
usually does.
Of those three guys, who would you say is the favorite to land that job?
Well, I think Joe Ross, with the adjustments that they made, I think it's like a job to lose for him. If he shows...
He'd be the leader in the clubhouse, I would think, right?
If he shows the stuff...
Starting the division series. So.
Yeah.
Excuse me, the World Series.
Yeah, was fine.
Shows the stuff that they think he has. And both pitched well when he stayed healthy. So I think it's between those two and, maybe Fetty's coming from the outside. But
That is Charlie Slows with Grant and Danny. You'll hear from Charlie and Dave Jagler both throughout the weekend as part of our Winterfest coverage. Plenty of players will be coming by as we'll be broadcasting live from the team store all weekend long. I'll be out there tomorrow with Craig Heist and Byron Kerr. The utility guys will be on from 12 until 2:30 tomorrow afternoon. Ashew and Lavero anchor our coverage starting next here at the top of the hour. This has been the Nat's Hot Stove Show on a Saturday morning live right here on 106.7 The Fan.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.